Mr. Jazz himself. Let's give him a great big hand. Charlie Yardbird Parker and string.
Charlie Parker on alto.
And alto sax, Charlie Parker.
I'm Christian McBride, and this is Jazz Night in America. There's so much mythology and lore surrounding Charlie Parker. Though his recording career was just shy of 14 years, the saxophonist, without a doubt, changed music forever. Even 100 years since his birth, we're still talking about him, examining him, and thinking about his legacy in new ways. Later on, we'll listen to some rare music written for, but never known to have been played by Byrd, and re-examine the context around his most commercially successful project, Byrd with Strings.
The opening sounds like we're listening to 1935 movie music. It sounds kind of cheesy. But then Charlie Parker comes in and we're in a completely different world.
He knows people listen to every note, so he doesn't have to play a lot of notes. He played just enough so he knows his sound, you know the melody, and before you know it, the song is done. That's the greatest thing about Charlie Parker.
He's still an icon, he really is. He's a hero, he's still, I can say this, the better I get, the better Byrd gets.
The voices of Parker biographer Carl Woidick and saxophonist Wessel Warm Daddy Anderson and Charles McPherson. They'll help us unpack Byrd's genius. Also later this hour, a rare glimpse into what it was like to work with Byrd from one of the violinists who played with him, Teddy Bloom.
Byrd was very much into qualification and strings. You know, he knew what had to be done.
There's so much substance in what any genius does. And I don't use that term lightly. Charlie Parker was a genius.
Along with playing and teaching music, trombonist Vincent Garner is also an archivist and historian. He says Byrd's work should be examined from every angle.
From his playing, to his writing, to the composers that he loved to listen to even his heroin addiction and his lifestyle. Like, there's something to learn from all of that. We know more in 2020 about music and about jazz and about life and even more about Byrd.
Back in 2011 at Jazz and Lincoln Center, Vincent took his appreciation of Byrd with Strings to the stage. He enlisted the Philharmonic Orchestra of the Americas and two alto saxophonists who've studied Parker, Charles McPherson and Wes Warm Daddy Anderson. They opened the concert with Charles McPherson playing Easy to Love.
Thank you.
Charles McPherson, taking us on a journey through the Charlie Parker with Strings version of the standard Easy to Love. Charlie Parker was a product of Kansas City swing, where gangsters ran blues bars and speakeasies, clubs that thrived despite the country's depression. As a kid, Bird would practice 11 to 15 hours a day.
He had played in marching bands and in concert bands in his high school and had a very good music program.
Trombonist Vincent Gardner.
As did a lot of those programs that were in African-American neighborhoods in those years, there was a real focus on bettering yourself, bettering the race through the arts in schools, in these neighborhoods, in African-American high schools. And all of these schools, they had really good music teachers. A lot of them were in the military, came out of the service, you know, very well trained by the military in music. So he had a very well-rounded education.
After high school, he joined touring big bands and saw the country. It was around this time that he likely became interested in working with strings. In 1949, after he'd made a name for himself in New York, he'd become the first jazz instrumental soloist to release an album with strings. The style fell in line with other successful orchestral jazz projects, but until Bird, those featured singers.
There was a boy.
This time, Charlie Parker was the singer.
Bird has like a perfect vibrato, like a great singer has.
Saxophonist Charles McPherson has spent his life honoring Bird's legacy. The first time he heard Parker, on a jukebox in a candy store. He was 14 years old. McPherson says that Bird's affinity for strings was simple. He was a musician with an open heart and mind toward all sounds.
There was a bar in Midtown that Bird used to go to in the afternoon, right around the corner from the Musicians Union. Most of the musicians in there, when they played the jukebox, it would be jazz. Bird would always come in and play country western music. And somebody said, "Why do you come in here, Bird, and mess the vibe up?" And Bird looked at him and said, "Just listen to the stories."
Bird was a sponge. We know that in addition to country music, he loved and even recorded Afro-Cuban music and dug composers like Bartok and Stravinsky. In an interview in 1954, the year before his untimely death, he said he wanted to study composition in Paris.
"I'd like to study some more. I'm not quite through yet. I don't consider myself too old to learn. I might have a chance to go to Academie de Musicale in Paris itself and study, you know."
"Would you study playing or composition or everything?"
"I would study both. I never want to lose my horn."
And that same year, in a different interview, Parker was asked about what he was listening to and what music he'd recommend.
Well, Bartok is my favorite composer. They can listen to Stravinsky's Firebird, Rite of Spring, The History of a Soldier, Card Party, Dumbarton Oaks, quite a few masterpieces among his works."
And sometimes what he absorbed made its way into his solos. Parker expert Carl Wojtek shared this Stravinsky-related story.
There's a recording of Charlie Parker in Paris, and Charlie Parker greets his French audience by playing a fast blues, and he does indeed quote the beginning of Rite of Spring. It's that da 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 da.
Did you catch that? It's fast. Here's the theme again.
Da 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 da.
And here's Bird using it in a solo.
And he does it, you know, where the premiere of Rite of Spring was made, in Paris.
It's funny, so many musicians today use the word genreless or respond, "I don't think of my music as any one genre." It feels like Bird was preaching the insignificance of genre more than 70 years ago. Here's Parker himself in an interview in 1948.
"You can't classify music in, I mean, as far as words are concerned, in terms of jazz and swing and Dixieland, et cetera, et cetera. It's just different forms of music. Different people have different conceptions and different ways of presenting things.
People have different ways of presenting things. Who knows what presentations Bird would have done if he'd lived longer? But thanks to musicians like Charles McPherson, we can hear the legacy of Bird transmitted down the line. McPherson has gone on to play a number of Bird with Strings tributes. He says that each time is daunting to step into those shoes.
You know, you're entering, you're exiting, you know, exactly when the arrangements say do that. So to maintain somewhat of your own individuality becomes even trickier because you're playing the exact same arrangements. In a way, this is when you realize how great Bird was.
Let's hear McPherson play the most famous Bird with string selection. This is Just Friends.
Thank you.
alto saxophonist Charles McPherson, backed by pianist Ehud Asheri, Ben Wolf on bass, Victor Lewis on drums, and the Philharmonic Orchestra of the Americas, playing Just Friends.
Here's another one of the most beautiful things. This is a single side that Charlie Parker made, Laura.
Like Just Friends, the song Laura was another popular standard from the 40s that Byrd took on. We'll hear saxophonist Wes Warm Daddy Anderson do his thing on it. And we'll meet Teddy Bloom, a member of Charlie Parker's string section back in the 50s. All that when Jazz Night in America continues. I'm Christian McBride. Welcome back. I'm Christian McBride, and this is Jazz Night in America. We're spending this hour thinking about Charlie Parker or the centennial celebration of his birth.
Hello, my name is Wessel Anderson, jazz alto saxophonist.
Just like Charles McPherson, who we heard earlier, Wes Anderson, also known as Warm Daddy, has put in countless hours of study into the music of Charlie Parker.
He plays the melody, but he doesn't play too much in between melodies. Byrd was like that. He was very concise.
One of the things he's still in awe of, Parker's control on the instrument.
And he makes it feel like somebody lifting up a feather and waving it, trying to stop a bus with a feather, and the bus stops. He has that type of control.
This is what Wes Anderson did on the standard, Laura. That was Laura, featuring alto saxophonist Wes Anderson and trombonist Vincent Gardner. Vincent says that early in jazz history, before Byrd began working with strings, the music fought for legitimacy against Western classical music.
And of course, the main instruments that you think about in Western classical music are the strings. having strings as a part of the new idiom called jazz music helped to, in some people's minds, legitimize it a certain way. And so there were always attempts to have strings because people like band leaders liked the positive attention that it gave to the music that they were playing.
We have to remember that jazz for a long time was regarded by popular white society as a kind of mongrel music, as a kind of lowly music that was performed in nightclubs where there was drinking and drugs and prostitution and so forth. And in fact, actually, many jazz musicians did play in these dives that were not acceptable to polite society, whether it be white or black. If you added strings to an ensemble, you added legitimacy.
Carl Woidick says that Bird's desire to work with strings was less about legitimizing jazz and more about merging his love of contemporary American popular song with a long-standing admiration of Western classical music.
If you haven't heard Charlie Parker and strings, if you haven't heard from Charlie Parker and strings, you haven't lived.
The merger took off, and Bird brought the strings uptown to a black audience at the Apollo, to Carnegie Hall, and the much more intimate club, his namesake, Birdland.
In life, you got to make it. Remember, we're here at Birdland at the Jazz Corner of the World, Broadway, 52nd Street.
He knew that the new music bebop being placed in front of a string section and having that be a part of, well, actually take over his output for a little while, he understood that those opportunities for African Americans didn't come that often. He was very aware, because Bird was a very conscious and aware person, very intelligent, you know. He knew where it was and where it could go now with this new opportunity that nobody in bebop had had. He understands that he can take it further.
Further meant expanding the songbook. Bird was mingling with aspiring writers and arrangers like Jerry Mulligan and John Lewis. But prior to writing for Parker, they had limited experience writing for soloists or strings. Let's hear alto saxophonist Wes Warm Daddy Anderson, pianist Ehud Asheri, Ben Wolfe on bass, Victor Lewis on drums, and the Philharmonic Orchestra of the Americas. Written by Jerry Mulligan, this is Rocker. That was alto saxophonist Wes Warm Daddy Anderson featured on Rocker, a song written by Jerry Mulligan for Charlie Parker with strings. We're re-examining that project this hour to honor what would have been the Yardbirds' 100th birthday. Rocker represented a shift in the sound. It was part of a brand new batch of songs written exclusively for Charlie Parker and strings. Charlie Parker never made a studio recording of Rocker. The only one that I know of is from a live recording at Carnegie Hall in the fall of 1950. One of the violinists on that Carnegie Hall date was a musician named Teddy Bloom. Bloom was classically trained, but made a career as a bit of a crossover artist. He died in 1992, but in 1987 appeared live on WKCR in New York, where he was interviewed by Phil Shapp to talk about what it was really like to play in the string section. Shapp speaks first.
Could you give us the standard instrumentation of Parker with strings?
We had three violins, viola, cello, and a harp.
And no double bass, jazz bass player, yeah, but no section basses.
No. We tried that out. It didn't work. We tried it once.
Uh-huh.
An interview like this, Phil Shapp and Teddy Bloom speaking candidly about Bird, is a gift to any Charlie Parker fanatic. Teddy Bloom's memory drifts, but what translates is his love and awe of Parker's musicianship.
But I had a deep love for him. He was a great man. He was a great composer, too.
Bloom, who would become Bird's manager, finally recalled some of the time they spent on the road together.
We had a lot of wonderful times together at night alone in the room, see? Because I never drink, say, or anything, so he knew that. So we would have some very interesting evenings, you know? He'd teach me the horn, I'd take the violin out, he'd try to learn the fiddle, you know?
How did he do?
A lot of fun. He couldn't draw a sound on the fiddle.
Really?
Yep.
But he had such an affinity for music.
Yeah, but he didn't have the feel on the bow. He didn't have the feel for the bow arm, you know, for the right arm. Mm. But he could put his ear, he could play the fingering, he could find that out. But he realized it difficult. Matter of fact, he got knowledgeable about the difficulties of a stringed instrument, which he liked.
Bloom says Charlie Parker was an excellent sight reader, had a phenomenal ear, and was especially fond of listening to violinist Yasha Heifetz.
Did you and Charlie Parker listen to classical music, either performances? Did you go to the opera or to the
concerts? No, what I did was I used to buy records for him. And he used to say to me, man, he says, get me the record of Heifetz. He screams. You know, that's what the words he used. He said, he screams. He says, his rhythm is the greatest I've ever heard. So you see, he had a great love for strings. There's no way of not recognizing Parker when you hear him. The timbre of sound that he had, and the manner of his technique, and his connections, and so forth. So he was a rarity, you follow me. He was like a chess player who knew what to do on the 34th move. You know what I'm talking about? He knew what was happening. I should thank God to have met him. He's the greatest man I ever met. Not only as a musician, but as a human being. But people didn't know him, you see, because he didn't have an opportunity to really show the world who he really was. Because he was fighting this black and white business, you know, very difficult things, you see. Yes. But he was the warmest man I ever met. Deep person who was trying to fight an affliction. Because I think that he was way ahead of his time. I mean, not only in jazz, or in anything.
Violinist Teddy Bloom speaking with Phil Shapp on WKCR in 1987. Teddy worked with Charlie Parker in the 50s for many of the live performances of Bird with Strings. When Jazz Night in America continues, we get back to some music as our two featured saxophonists, Charles McPherson and Wes Warm Daddy Anderson, take the stage together to honor Bird. I'm Christian McBride, and this is Jazz Night in America. Welcome back to Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Repetition is an Afro-Cuban infused piece written by Neil Hefti, originally for big band. It was adapted for Bird with strings, never recorded in the studio, but captured on this 1950 recording at Carnegie Hall. ¶¶ Let's head back to our Bird with Strings tribute from 2011 at Jazz and Lincoln Center, where the band did their thing on the song Repetition. Thank you. Repetition, played here by Charles McPherson and Wes Anderson at Jazz Lincoln Center in 2011. That song, and the song we heard earlier called Rocker, those are tunes written for, and we know performed live, by Charlie Parker's group With String. But as Vincent Gardner was preparing for this concert, he worked to assemble the music that was never recorded live or in the studio.
Aesthetic is one that a tune that I've known for a long time and played a lot myself, and it's really kind of out there.
Aesthetic was written by pianist George Russell. He'd go on to become a prolific cross-genre composer.
George Russell was a very forward-thinking musician and wrote melodies that would just jump, you know, if you put them on a graph chart, it looks like the stock market. It jumps all the way up in here and down like that, you know. So George Russell's tunes are wild.
All that angularity in this song, Aesthetic, makes it difficult to play, but we can imagine that Bird had no trouble. There's no evidence that he ever played it live, but Carl Woidick thinks Bird did play it in rehearsal.
And this is an arrangement that George Russell got to Charlie Parker. If we look at the score for Aesthetic, we can see that there are some notations on this. They definitely tried to rehearse this piece, but somehow it was never recorded commercially and never captured on a live recording by an amateur recordist.
But thanks to this concert, we have a chance to hear Wes Warm Daddy Anderson take a stab. This is Aesthetic.
Thank you.
That was Aesthetic, a piece written by George Russell back in 1949 for Charlie Parker. It featured Vincent Gardner on trombone and Wes Anderson on alto saxophone. We'll go out with one more from our Charlie Parker with Strings concert, another rare piece written for Bird but never recorded. This last one, called Scootin', is a fast one by John Lewis, who'd go on to become a founding member of the Modern Jazz Quartet. Warm Daddy is the feature soloist. Jazz Night in America is a production of WBGO, Jazz Lincoln Center, and NPR Music. The music in this week's episode was recorded by Rob McCumber. The Philharmonic Orchestra of the Americas was conducted by Ben Wendell and included, on violin, Daniel Andai, Brooke Quiggins-Saulnier, Elizabeth Young, Cece Pantikian, Reggie Papa, and Audrey Lowe. On viola was Irene Momchilova and Yova. Benjamin Capps played cello, Keith Wilson on oboe and English horn, and Christy Shade on harp. We'd like to extend a sincere thank you to Phil Schaap for his decades of Charlie Parker research and for his blessing to use his interview with Teddy Bloom. Shout out to Carrie Farrell, Carl Wojtek, and a revised edition of his book, Charlie Parker, His Music and Life. This episode was written and produced by Alex Arif. Our team includes Trevor Smith, Sarah Kirsten, and Sarah Gilletti. Katie Simon is our senior producer. Lauren Anke is the Senior Director for NPR Music. Executive producers are Gabrielle Armand and Anya Grundman. I'm Christian McBride.